I'm Tyler Miller, and you're listening to Sound of the Loons.
Morning, afternoon, or evening, depending on when this finds you. Welcome to the Sound of the Loons podcast. I'm Steve McPherson. I'm joined by Callum Williams.
I mean, I've certainly gone by worse.
I'm not in mid-season form yet. I'm in preseason form. Callum Williams, and we are delighted to welcome goalkeeper Tyler Miller to the podcast. Tyler, how's it going?
I'm doing great. Just finished a good training session.
Yes, and you bought a car.
I did buy a car. A nice new Audi SQ5.
I feel like you're settling in.
I do. I'm slowly getting my life together here in the Midwest.
It's striking when you talk to guys, you get traded, you get moved, you get signed or whatever like that. And you roll up and you're like, well, you find out, I wasn't aware of this when the team started in MLS, but you find out after the fact that guys are living in like a hotel for several months and, you know, they don't have a car and it's a lot of disorientation that goes into moving teams.
It is tough. I mean, when you get traded or you have to find a new team, a new home, it's not an easy transition all the time. And coming here, I was here for 5 days and then I was in Florida for 2 weeks and now I'm here for 4 more days and trying to find an apartment, find cars, figure out the best neighborhoods to live in, talk to all these guys and question like, okay, what do I really want out of my time living here? It's a lot to ask when you don't have that much time actually in market.
What has it been like for you in the small time that you've had here in the Twin Cities? Have you been able to go and see downtown, for example, look for apartments or what have you?
Yeah, so we're staying at a hotel downtown, right around the North Loop area. So I've been able to walk around there on the days that it's not 0 degrees outside. But other than that, yeah, I've seen a few areas that I really like and enjoy, and so I have signed a lease and found an apartment that I'm going to live in. I just got a car yesterday, so I feel like there's two major things that I've really hit the nail on the head and really can settle in now and try to start figuring out the little details of my apartment and the car and all that stuff.
And so as you walked around a little bit in Minneapolis, have you found any, have you had good meals or anything like that? Have you gotten to go out with guys or hit up any place that you were like, I really like this?
So thankfully I have been to Minneapolis one time before with the national team for Gold Cup while we're here. And I went to the Butcher and the Boar and it's one of my favorite spots. I was there for dinner last night. And then I also went to another spot called FEMA's.
Yeah.
Downtown.
Yes.
And I know the chef there and he makes amazing course of meals and have great drinks. And so those are my two favorite spots so far, but I'm looking forward to exploring and finding new coffee shops and other little restaurants.
Yeah. David FEMA who runs that place. I know he works with the Timberwolves and he's done stuff with Target Center for food and things like that, which is very cool. So
yeah, no, he's a really great guy too.
Yeah. And you mentioned coffee. This is another thing. This came up before. You're a big coffee fan.
Yeah.
I understand. Do you make it yourself or do you strictly go to coffee shops?
I haven't gotten my own coffee machine to make it myself yet.
Sure.
So maybe that's the next step, but I love going to the coffee shops. I love the social aspect of it, getting to see people, meet people, talk to the baristas, because they're the ones that know the local spots the best, I find.
Yeah.
And so when you go in there, it's just the opportunity to talk to somebody and really find out where the hidden gems are of the town.
Yeah, I really discovered that there are, you know, I had a regular old coffee maker for a long time. I had a Bun, which I recommend. They're great. They're very simple. There's no clock. There's no anything. It's just straight ahead. And then I got into the whole, like, we got a French press, and we had a Chemex pour over. We got an AeroPress. Like, we have different options for what kind of coffee.
You're a little scientist in the kitchen.
Yeah, the AeroPress is my favorite so far.
Okay.
But I know Cal is also a big coffee fan and tea fan. His tea is excellent.
Yeah, a coffee in the morning, tea in the afternoon. That tends to be the way I roll. But also, talking of good places around the Twin Cities, Tyler and I actually bumped into each other rather unexpectedly just before preseason. We were at an engagement party at a friend of ours and former Minnesota Thunder player, Craig Malice.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, all of a sudden I'm just there talking to a few people, enjoying the evening. All of a sudden I feel these two big burly arms wrap around me. I'm like, who on earth is this? And, and that was a good night. And you got to experience Brits Pub for the first time as well.
I did. I didn't get to do any lawn bowling, though, which I am very excited about going back in the summer and testing that out.
Okay, well, we'll do a game for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
As far as like lawn bowling and other sort of sporting activities, are you very competitive when you do anything?
So I didn't think so, but last week we were down in Orlando and we were playing a little beach volleyball, three on three.
And Top Gun style, right?
Yeah, of course. And we're playing with Gabby, and she's a tremendous player. She used to play in high school. And
natural athlete.
Just something took over where it was a very like close game, and I just started going to the net and jumping, and the ball would be going to Gabby, and I would just jump up and hit it from her. And I apologized to her because I didn't mean to get this competitive, but we're playing against Brent and Dane and one other guy, and I'm just like, no, like I want to win this game.
when the chips are down, you're like, this is fun, we're just relaxing. Yeah. But then you start getting into it. I definitely feel that. Volleyball, I loved volleyball in high school. That was my favorite activity in gym. And then sometime later in life, I was at a retreat, like a writer's retreat, and we played volleyball. There was like, you know, sort of sand courts out there. And we all had a great time this night. Everybody's playing volleyball. And then the next night, we're like, let's do it again. You know, like we had so much fun. The first time I hit a bump, like I had like these bruises I didn't really realize on my hands because it's like, it kind of hurts, you know? Yeah. And I was like, we can't do this again.
Yeah. No, if you're not hitting the ball right, it's definitely going to leave a mark.
I was definitely not hitting the ball right. I am not a trained volleyball player. So another question I had for you is I've done some research. It seems like you've had a wide range of haircuts, just judging by sort of...
That is true.
Images I've seen on the internet now, and this comes from someone where I've had long hair, short hair, I had a blonde mohawk. I've been through the paces as well.
Yeah.
Is it something that are you just a restless soul? Do you just feel like you need to change it up fairly regularly?
You know, I just kind of go with whatever I'm feeling. I had a haircut in LA that I had stuck to, and then for some reason I decided to bleach my hair. I thought it was cool. One of my other buddies, Tristan, he did it as well. And I got to the point where I'm very low maintenance.
Sure.
And so like I was not going to go back and keep bleaching the roots, and then it grew out and then I cut it. And I was just like, I can't keep up with this anymore. So then I just buzzed it all off. And I look like I just got out of jail.
Right.
I think that was the first time I had buzzed my hair since fourth grade.
Okay.
So start of fourth grade, I was super self-conscious. I always thought, I was like, dang, I have a really big forehead. So I grew out my hair to try and cover it. And I had that same haircut until senior year of college. Okay. So it was a long time.
So that was like the floppy.
Yeah, just floppy, kind of, okay, Justin Bieber. Like I had my hair on the side would like be wings. It looked like I was going to fly away like a little Flappy Bird or something like that. And then senior year, I was like, okay, let me get like a proper haircut. And I stuck with that for a few years. Bleached my hair, buzzed it. And now I'm growing it out. Now I don't really know what I'm doing.
You've got a good base coat now. I think you could go a couple different directions with it.
Yeah.
You know, like you got to cultivate the farm and then
I'm giving myself options.
Yeah, exactly. that's great.
I feel as though you need a couple of different haircuts before you really understand what you're supposed to do. Yeah. Particularly when the weather is the way it is here in Minneapolis as well. It's just a little bit unpredictable. And Steve, I've got to say, your flow, by the way, is looking fabulous right now.
Thank you. I got a haircut this morning.
So. Oh, is that right? Wow. Well, that's okay. Fair enough.
I didn't look great yesterday. So it got a little bit, you know, it gets over the ears. And
That's what I start to think of. Maybe we should get this trimmed when it comes over the ears. But, you know, each to their own.
I mean, speaking of moving and changing places, like finding that right barber, I feel like that relationship is one that you sort of establish. Like, this is my go-to person. And then it's very difficult to change. Even if you stay in the same place, you decide you don't want to go to the same barber anymore. I feel like it's breaking up with somebody. Like you don't want to bump into them on the street and be like, oh, you're getting your hair cut somewhere else now.
Yeah, it's almost like you're cheating on them. It's like, sorry, I just had to move on.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I go to a place in Northeast called the Barbershop, which I started going to a little while ago, and it's very close. It's very easy. You can either walk in or schedule. I feel like I'm doing an ad. I'm not doing a read. I just
how much do haircuts go for here? Because in LA, I was spending close to $70 a haircut. Oh,
that's a lot.
Yeah,
I think on the expensive end for men's haircuts, I've gone as high as maybe 50 here.
Okay.
The barbershop, it's like about half that. But it's more of a barber, less of a hairstylist. Yeah. It sort of depends on how styled you want to be.
I like the barber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Low maintenance. I mean, I think that when I went through my changing lots of hairstyles, it wasn't because I was high maintenance. It was because I was low maintenance. I would be like, I'd do something and I'd be like, I'm sick of this. And I'd shave it.
Yeah.
I'd grow it out. I'd do something different. You got to figure out who you are, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
It all comes down to you as a person.
grooming tips.
Turn the new leaf, haven't we, on this podcast?
They did not think they'd be tuning in for some grooming tips.
Yeah, right. You never know what you're going to get.
As Steve was sort of alluding to there, just on the subject of moving around, what was it like for you moving to Los Angeles and living in what is such a fabulous city?
Honestly, I was super excited for it. Seattle was a great city. And I had a lot of great friends up there, and it was a very welcoming environment. But there were times where I just felt I was so secluded up there. It's not a place that many people are going to visit out of my friend group. And once I moved to LA, everyone was, for some reason, all excited to come and see me.
Suddenly they're crashing on your couch.
Like they went to school in Chicago. It's cold in February. And they're like, hey, can I come out to LA or something like that? And I was just like, yeah, sure, of course. You just want to escape the winter.
Yeah.
But no, I didn't mind it. I actually really enjoyed living in LA. It was just a whole new world. It opened up so many more opportunities for me. I got my first chance to start and play. Got a consistent run of games, and it was just an opportunity to kind of explore what LA is all about. Like, I grew up in a small city called Woodbury, New Jersey, and 10,000 people there. Like, it's close to a lot of stuff in New Jersey. It's close to Philadelphia, which is a major market, but I had never in my life thought, okay, I'm going to be living in Los Angeles one day, playing in front of 22,000 people and living in a city of however many million they have there. And it's just, there were times where I would catch myself on the field before the game would start and just being like, wow, like I'm playing soccer in Los Angeles. Like, this is a surreal moment for me.
I've got to ask you as well, watching from the outside, the LA Derby,
yeah,
humongous deal to American soccer. What's it like actually being involved in it and playing in it and against the superstars like Zlatan Ibrahimovic?
I try to approach each game as it's another game, but there's no hiding it. It's in that game, you're a little bit more excited leading up to it. There's a little bit more pressure every game, and it demands a higher attention. But at the same time, it's easy to get up for those games. Like, it's the games where you're playing midweek and there's not many people tuned in because you're playing somebody who's maybe on the bottom of the table or something. Sure. Like that you really have to pay special attention to. But the Galaxy game, the Trafico, as I like to call it, was one of the most special moments, I say, I've had at LAFC. And beating them in the playoffs was a very exciting moment because we all talked about it, and it was so frustrating for us because from the outsider's perspective, I'm sure you guys saw that we just couldn't get past that hump. And then when it finally came in the most important derby that we had with them, I think it was a very exciting moment for all of us in the organization.
Yeah, it's interesting you're saying the thing about those marquee games, you sort of get up for those, but it's a long season and there's a lot of games that you could look at and just say, well, you know, we got to write that one off. It's just where it's, you know, like, and those are the ones that really can, it sort of separates the teams that are really going to be trouble at the end of the season into the postseason from other ones. That was a thing that happened with Minnesota United last year where, you know, we sort of had this run of games that to open the season, some success on the road, a little bit of a weird opening to Allianz Field because it was very new for everybody. It didn't really feel like home field. And then I always remember this game where the team went on the road against Montreal, and we had a bunch of depth guys playing, basically. It was like I can't remember if it was international call-ups or what it was, but, you know, I sort of looked at that, and I was like, well, we're not going to win this game. Yeah. And then they pulled it out and won it. And that was really one of the first times that I remember going, like, yeah, this is more than just when we have our best players at home, we can play well. It's yeah. like you had not the usual starting 11 on the road and they pulled it out. And that's, I feel like that's a real test of a team.
It is 100%. And I think that really shows up in the Open Cup a lot.
Because yeah.
a lot of times what I experienced, especially with Seattle, is we put out second team players or reserve players or even guys on S2, the development team there. And like you're going into a game where we're playing San Jose or we're playing at Salt Lake. It's a really tough environment. You're playing at altitude and you don't have any expectations of the team or whatever. But that's the thing about those games is like all those players get up for those games so much. They're so excited for that opportunity to finally show what that they what they have and what they can do for the club that I think almost sometimes then it's an advantage to give those guys opportunities in those games because they've been working their butts off for that opportunity. And when they finally get it, it can go one of two ways. They either show up or it's a tough time for them. But
yeah.
more oftentimes than not, I think that guys really show up for those moments and put in good performances that can boost the overall team.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because the Open Cup is one of those things where that it's not a thing you, a lot of mainstream sports in America, we don't have this thing of like a tournament running sort of concurrently yeah. with the season. And so that understanding of, you know, when MLS teams come in, again, it's a really long season. People need rest, you know, players need rest just from that. You play a different kind of squad. But then as you sort of, if you get a couple wins, then it starts getting serious. And it can really build, I think that was a huge part of the momentum for Minnesota United last year was having success in the Open Cup at the same time as having success in MLS. And it started to feel like, oh, this is, there is really something here. Yeah, so yeah,
five wins, you get to lift the trophy.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
I know you didn't play as much as you would have wanted to at Seattle Sounders, but talk about that moment when you realized that being a professional soccer player could really be a reality for you, Tyler. When was that and where were you and what did it feel like?
For me, it happened in college. My freshman year at Northwestern, I had put in a really good season there and we had went on to win the Big Ten regular season title and then we went on to win the Big Ten tournament and we were ousted by Akron in the first round. But then I just started to gain some coverage in the media and stuff like that, and then that next summer I had the opportunity to go and train with Chicago Fire. And working with the goalkeeper coach there and the goalkeepers there, Sean Johnson especially, like I would compare myself like every single session and I was like, okay, like I'm doing well, I'm performing well. And then I really started to build on that. And after three summers of training with them, I knew I was right there with those guys and competing. And I knew that if I had my opportunity that I would be able to really take off with it. And it was just a matter of where I was going to get the opportunity. And when Seattle came along, I was very excited about it because obviously it was a historic club. They were yes. doing well and they one of the best attendances. And so like showing up to games were fun. And it came in an Open Cup game actually where I hadn't been playing at all. And then first opportunity I get is Open Cup match. And I have a really solid performance. We win in penalty kicks. And I was like, okay, like I know that I have the abilities to really perform at this level and also be successful.
I was speaking to the goalkeeper coach at Minnesota United, Stuart Kerr, about you yesterday, and he said you have been first class. How much of a change have you noticed in your game from when you were first drafted to now here at Minnesota United, especially after getting the playing time at LAFC?
Good question. Yeah. I like that. props.
I've noticed a ton, and I think a lot of it has come from my training habits. I used to be a perfectionist when it came to training, and I thought like, okay, like if I'm trying to do everything perfect and if I'm like holding myself really accountable all the time, that's going to be the best way for me to gain success the quickest. But I've slowly learned that that's not the correct attitude to have. It's okay to try to be perfect and do your best. And that's like, I try to do my best at everything, but I also am realistic and I accept that there are going to be some days where I'm going to play terrible. There's going to be some days where I'm going to play great. And there's going to be a lot of days where I just have a consistent game. And if I can build on those consistent games and limit the mistakes that I make, that overall I'll be able to see this slow growth in my game, and that I'll be more successful in games when it matters most.
Mm. And also, sorry, Steve, the other thing I
jeez, really Kelly, stepping on.
Sorry. psychologically,
yeah.
As a goalkeeper, yeah. I can't imagine what you go through during a game. What are the differences, and how much of a difference is there from making a mistake and then making a great save? Psychologically, what is it like to go through that, and your confidence must go up and down so quickly?
Yeah, and that's something that I have gotten a lot from my dad and my parents, is keeping that level head, because this is something that my goalkeeper coach in LA, Zach, he really helped me with, because the mental side of the game is so much more important than the physical side. If you are mentally in the right space, you're going to be able to perform your job 99% of the time.
Yes.
So whether I made a great save or I made a mistake, it's that short-term memory of like, okay, you made a great save, but what is the next play going to be? And being ready to make that next save, being ready to come out and claim that next cross, that is more important than what you just did. And it comes with a mistake too. If I make a mistake, well, I made a mistake. Can't do anything about it now, but I can help the team in the next play that I make. And that next play could be the difference between whether we win or lose that game.
Yeah, there's so many things I want to talk about now. That growth mindset, yeah, idea, I think is so important. And it's a thing that, I mean, obviously it's key in sports and, yeah, and for athletes, but I think it's key in so many areas of life.
It's key in life, Gerald.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that I have two daughters and an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old. And it's one of those things that I'm constantly trying to sort of work on with them, because, yeah, especially the 8-year-old, I, when I was younger, was a perfectionist, but also like a procrastinator,
yeah,
and sometimes lazy. And I think some of that came from a fear of failing, because I wanted to do it right, you know, and that, yeah, would lead me to not allow a mistake to happen. And then as you get, eventually you get older, you realize like that's when you're growing, is those moments 100%. When you're making mistakes. And so to sort of, yeah, try to work on that feeling of like, it's okay.
Yeah.
Like you went out there and you tried, it didn't work out. Like, what did you learn from that? And, yeah, if you're just a perfectionist, if you're just focused on what you did wrong, you're closing yourself off to the next thing that's coming along.
Exactly. And you're eating yourself up inside, and you're never going to be able to move on and really focus on the things that are actually important in life.
Yeah.
And nowadays, the generation is all about instant gratification.
Sure.
You have Instagram, you have Twitter, you have everything at your two thumbs and on your phone, and you can post a picture and you can get likes and you feel great in that moment. But it's allowing kids, and I don't have kids, so I can't really speak to what it's like raising kids, but I know it's those moments on the field where I fail, I'm bummed out, but I see it as an opportunity to be like, okay, I failed, let me try a different way.
Yeah.
And if I fail that way, let me try a different way. It's more of like, okay, this didn't work, so I'm gonna try this way. That didn't work, I'm gonna try this way. I never really feel like I'm at a point where I'm like, okay, I've done it, I've made it. Because I always feel like there's,
yeah,
things are changing and there's going to be new failures along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And as long as you're allowing yourself to learn from those failures, you're constantly going to be growing and becoming a better person.
Yeah. I was talking to Brent Coleman yesterday, and a great guy. You know, I've known him since the team came into MLS and when I joined the team. And, you know, we were talking about just the challenges he's faced, and he was suspended, he's going through a suspension, but wanting to come back stronger from that. And I was sort of, yeah, just asking him about that process, and he was saying that he's, you know, whether it's, you know, obviously he takes responsibility for that, but also to say that, you know, I can't remember exactly how he put it, but he said something along the lines of like, he's been blessed to never become complacent, because,
yeah,
he had three different coaches in 4 years at Creighton, and he's had to sort of prove himself again every year, essentially.
Yeah.
And that has meant that he's always facing those challenges, and that's helped him grow a lot, which is,
yes,
that's huge. So,
yeah.
Another question, slightly different, but sort of along the same lines. I was curious, we talked a little bit about this is all very confusing because this will come out before anything that I worked on yesterday at production day will come out. But we talked a little bit about the sort of the craziness of goalkeepers and what it takes to be a goalkeeper. Were you always a goalkeeper? Like, or did you play? I mean, I'm sure every kid plays many different positions. Like, when did you come to goalkeeping and what were you doing before that?
Yeah, so I started off playing on the field and I followed like both my older brothers, especially my bitter brother Kyle. He was a forward, and so I was like, well, let me try and be a forward. I want to be like you. I want to score goals. And got to be around like 8 or 9, and I was just like on the bench one day. And I remember the day vividly still. It's weird. Like there were ducks like flying over in a V formation. And I was like, huh. And then the second half, I talked to the coach, and he's like, who wants to play goalie? And I'm like, sure, I'll try it out. Like, why not? And nothing happened the entire game. But I got to punt the ball. I think like that moment of like getting to pick it up and just kick it as far as I can. I was like, this is so cool. So from that moment, I just kept asking to play goalie, and it turned out that I was pretty good at it. And I just kept working on it and working on it. And then eventually my parents, they got me involved with a goalie trainer in the area. And it just is something that I found a passion for. And my oldest brother, Jason, he played goalkeeper in high school until he got too tall for the goal. He's 6'8". So
wow.
He was literally too tall.
There's a limit. Yeah.
But like, I was like, all right, like let me see what I can do. And like, it was just kind of ran in the family of soccer and sports in general. And so like my parents, I'm super grateful to them because they fully embraced my passion for it. And they always told me like, we don't know like what's going to happen. You don't know, like, we support your dreams, whatever you want to do, like go out and try.
Yeah.
So that freedom that they gave me really allowed me to kind of pursue this to the fullest.
Yeah. Having a support system around you is for anything that's not sort of just, you know, I don't mean to crap on lawyers, but like anything that's just sort of like, this is what you're going to do with your life. It's like, I started in music and went into writing, and I've done a lot of different things, and my parents have always been supportive of it. And that's huge. So
when you try to force somebody to do something, more often than not, they do the opposite.
Yeah. True.
So, true. Talking of support as well, perhaps from a different avenue and angle, as you developed as a goalkeeper, who did you look up to?
I looked up to everybody. I mean, I would watch Premier League most of the time. So I watched Van der Sar. I watched Joe Hart. I knew about Buffon in Serie A and all those guys. And Tim Howard, especially, one of the first games that he got to play for Man U was against Barcelona in like a preseason friendly in Philadelphia. And I actually got to go to that game. And one thing that I could tell all the young goalkeepers who are listening is, when you get the opportunities to go to games, get your parents to get you there an hour early. Go and sit and just watch how the guys warm up. The little things that they do, you can learn a ton from. A ton. You just see how they carry themselves and the drills that they're doing. And I would go and I'd write them down, and like I would go and take them to my goalie coach and be like, hey, can we work on this? I saw that so-and-so doing this. So that was something that really like sparked my interest in the position itself too.
Is Tim Howard the best American goalkeeper there ever has been?
I mean, it's hard to argue with it. It's the things that he's done with his career. I would say that he's, if not the best, he is up there. I mean, he's got to be in every conversation. And I don't really like to think about who's the best or who isn't the best. I think that he's had an amazing career, and I just like show a lot of appreciation for the things that he's done, because he's taken a really difficult journey with going over to Europe at such a young age, and the things that he's been able to do, especially with his diagnosis of Tourette's syndrome, I think is just a tremendous thing, and it's inspiring to all young people out there who might be suffering from a similar illness.
He was beyond staggering for the U.S. national team. Where do you stand now in terms of the U.S. national team? I think you're right on the cusp, are you? When do you expect that first cap to arrive?
I'm not sure. I really have no idea. And that is not anything that I'm focused on right now. My focus is 100% on Minnesota and doing everything that I can do every day in training to make sure that I'm putting myself in a position that if I am to be selected, it would be a huge honor. And if I do get that first cap, it would be a huge honor. But right now, I know that the only thing that I can do is focus on training each day, getting ready for our preseason friendlies in Portland, and then being ready for that first game.
Great answer.
Well, now that you've told us that you don't like to speculate and you don't like to rank things, I'm going to ask you to speculate about some rank things. I'm just sort of curious because, there's in MLS every year, there's a lot of turnover, there's changes. You're obviously part of those changes yourself. How much attention, I think as people who work for the team, we have to be aware of these things, and fans are tracking player movements and who's going where. How much are you keeping track of things like that? Have you looked at other teams in MLS and thought like, oh, well, they got better. This is going to be a really challenging thing. Like if you were looking at the teams right now and you're sort of like season's opening, like who do you see at the top of speculative power rankings, the top couple teams? You don't have to rank anybody by numbers, but I'm just curious who you look at and go, that's going to be tough.
Honestly, I have no clue.
Okay.
I seriously have no clue.
I admire it.
I go away from training, and I have been trying to figure out my life more. So, I don't have time to be sitting there and looking at who's going where. I found out yesterday at Media Day that one of my good friends got traded, Walker Zimmerman. And I was honestly shocked because I thought for sure there's certain players on teams that you're like, there's no way this guy is expendable.
Yeah.
And you quickly learn that soccer is a business.
Just about everybody can be.
And everybody can be bought. I think that there's obviously a lot of great teams out there. And I mean, there's so many players that are coming and going. I commend the people that actually do break all of this news to everybody, because there's a lot of news to follow. But I just try to honestly find other hobbies that help me, because if I'm constantly involved in soccer off the field, then when I get to training, at times it's easy to disconnect.
Yeah, sure.
And I want my focus to 100% always be on football when I'm here, and then when I'm gone, I'll allow myself to entertain myself in different ways.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about that entertaining yourself in different ways then. I also know you're a Game of Thrones fan.
I am.
Have you watched it multiple times, first of all, and have you found anything to fill the yawning chasm now that it's over?
So I've only watched it once.
Okay.
My history with Game of Thrones is very complicated, because I started on season 4, watched up to 6, and then went back, watched 1 to 3,
okay,
and then 4 to 6 again, and then I finished
okay.
out. So it was a really, like, my friends were into it first, and then I got into it, and then I had to backtrack. Right now, I'm actually watching a show called Sex Education.
I heard about that.
Yes, it's on Netflix. I would recommend you be of mature age if you're going to watch
okay.
it. but it's a very funny show. It's got a lot of like dry humor, and I appreciate the dry humor. Cause I think sometimes they don't intend it to come off as funny.
Sure.
And I might have that like crazy personality that things that people don't find funny.
Yeah.
I find funny.
Yeah. So as far as, the one thing that comes up with talking to players a lot is, you're spending time on airplanes.
Yeah.
You got that little screen in front of you.
Yeah.
When you've got that little screen in front of you, are you looking for a new movie or something that you haven't seen yet? Is this a time to catch up, or are you just looking for something that's like, this is going to scratch an itch that you know you want to see something?
A lot of times it's something that I've heard is good.
Okay.
But I haven't had the opportunity to watch it yet, and that's where I'll try to pass the time by watching that movie. Or I've been doing a lot of reading. But then on this flight home, one of our equipment guys, Sean Bigness, he sent me a little message, and you could play like games like from seat to seat.
So sure.
we were playing this little I Spy game the entire flight home.
You got to do something to pass the time on
exactly.
the planes. Yeah,
exactly.
It can be a little brutal sometimes.
Yeah.
So what was I have one other silly question for you. Was there a movie that you watched over and over again when you were a kid? We were having a discussion about this in the office like the other day, that these, there's some movies. I saw Ferris Bueller's Day Off 100,000 times. I think once it came out on VHS, I would fake sick and stay home. And then my parents would ask me if I wanted a movie from the drugstore, and I always pick Ferris Bueller's Day Off, not really realizing maybe this would tip them off that I was faking sick. But, but was there a movie like that for you that you were like, I somehow have seen this movie so many times?
There's not one that I can think of in particular, but there is one that's sticking out to me right now that I remember very vividly, and that's The Big Green.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a soccer movie, and
all right.
super funny. My mom actually gifted that to me. I think it was for graduating college or something along those sorts. It was some type of gift where she was just like, I want you to have this because it's soccer and it means a lot to you and all that stuff. And like part of the way it finishes is the goalie like envisions himself as like this master knight and all this stuff. And it's just a really funny movie. If you haven't seen it and you like soccer, I recommend you finding a copy of that and watching it.
So what's the age? Like, what is it, a PG movie? Is it a PG? Like, what is
it? It's a PG movie.
Okay.
Yeah. It's basically like an older version of Kicking and Screaming.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Which also is one of my favorite movies still to this day.
Okay. These are good recommendations. Cal, did you have anything else you wanted to?
Well, I was made to watch The Big Green during the off season by the wife. I guess it's some sort of American passage or pathway of some sort. And
apparently, I have to get on this.
Yeah, I thought to myself, okay, well, all right, I'll be a good husband here and do the due diligence. And it's an interesting movie. That's probably the best way to describe it.
Right.
But yes, as Tyler said, if you haven't had the chance, I recommend you watch it. But the movie that I can think of in terms of watching growing up was GoldenEye.
Okay.
Big James Bond fan.
Not the video game, but the movie.
Both.
Video games are great. I love that. Yes. Love that video game.
It's a great video game.
Yeah. It was used to cheat with Odd Job with the spinning hats.
Yeah.
Because he was too small and you couldn't.
He was shorter than all the other players, yes, right?
Absolutely.
That's what it is. Yeah.
That's my childhood in a nutshell.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, I saw an article that was like on the anniversary of GoldenEye or something, and it was with the developers, and they were like, oh, Odd Job is a total cheat. Like, anybody who yelled at you for using Odd Job, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, Tyler Miller, thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for joining us for the 91st Sound of the Loons podcast. Minnesota United is heading west to Portland for a preseason tournament at Providence Park to play games against the Timbers, the Whitecaps, and the Revolution. I believe that's right. We're discussing the order, but you'll figure it out. So be sure to leave us a nice review on iTunes or at the very least a 5-star rating and follow the team on Twitter at MNUFC after we crapped on Twitter and Instagram. But anyways, and Cal at CalWilliams.com. You can follow me at Steve Entris. Tyler, are you on the Twitters?
I'm on the Twitters. I'm on TYMiller01.
Okay. Follow him on Twitter too. Instagram, I'm sure we got all that stuff going on. So apologies as always to Richard Wagner. And remember, there's only one person in this whole world like you, and people can like you exactly as you are.